Okay, I want you to imagine a scenario. It's a job interview. You're sitting across from a hiring manager, and they ask you that classic dreaded question. Tell me about your biggest success from your last job.
Standard stuff, usually pull out a metric, a sales figure, maybe a completed project that came in under budget.
Exactly. You want to show results. But imagine you look them in the eye and say, "Well, I knocked on a door 50 years ago. They didn't let me in, they didn't buy anything, and I haven't seen them since."
You probably wouldn't get the job.
You would definitely not get the job.
No.
In our modern world, we are just absolutely obsessed with ROI, return on investment. We
Yeah.
want that feedback loop to be tight.
Right. We do the work, we get the result.
Preferably by Friday afternoon.
It's the Amazon Prime mindset applied to like all of life. But the sources we're looking at today argue for a completely different timeline.
A very different timeline.
They're suggesting that the result, the actual impact of your work, might not show up until you're literally an old man, or maybe never, at least not where you can see it.
Today on the Deep Dive, we are unpacking a really fascinating stack of documents. We've got personal journals, retrospective memoirs, and mission reports.
And they're all focused on the Finland-Helsinki mission.
Right. And specifically, we're looking at the experiences of two men, Burke Rees and Darwin Rasmussen, starting way back in the early 1970s.
And to be clear, this isn't just a history lesson about Finland. This is a masterclass in a concept the source material calls planting seeds.
Planting seeds.
It's a deep look at the psychology of invisible work and, the long game.
That phrase comes up over and over in these accounts. So let's set the stage here. Finland, early 1970s.
Right. Context is everything here. If you've never been to Finland, especially back in the 70s, it's a unique environment. We aren't talking about a bustling city where everyone is, chatty and open to
No,
strangers.
the sources describe it as, well, tough.
Stoic. It's private. And geographically, we are going far north. Our first account centers on a town called Kajaani.
Kajaani. Just looking at it on a map, it looks isolated. It's way up there.
It is. And for a young American missionary, or veli, as they are called in Finnish, which means brother, arriving there in March of 1973, I mean, that is a massive culture shock.
So we have Veli Reis. He arrives in Kajaani, and the reality of his daily life is pretty stark.
Yeah.
The source material says the local branch of the church consisted of three sisters and one elder. That's it. That's the entire support network.
Tiny, you can just imagine the feeling of vulnerability. You're essentially alone in the
And
wilderness.
the work itself.
Oh.
Reese describes it vividly in his journals. One slammed door after another with plenty of swearing at us.
That's that feedback loop we were talking about earlier. It's negative, relentlessly negative.
Yeah.
And this is where the journal aspect becomes so interesting to me.
Right, because Reese keeps a daily journal. Like a lot of people in that situation, he's trying to find meaning in the day-to-day.
He's documenting what he thinks is success.
He's trying to validate his own time there.
Yeah.
And we all do this. We narrate our own lives. We highlight the characters we think are the protagonists.
So who does he write about?
He writes about a couple of specific families. He mentions the Puri family. He spends time with them. He writes that the husband was humble, a good man, but ultimately decided the social cost of joining was just too high.
Which is a common tragedy in these accounts. Almost. It's heartbreaking when you get that close.
It is. And then he writes about a sister, Mehunen. Now, I have to mention this detail because it's the most relatable part of the whole text.
Let me guess. The food.
She made incredible panakukut.
Finished pancakes, baked in the oven, usually served with jam. If you are a hungry 19-year-old on a meager budget in the freezing cold, that pancake is probably the highlight of your month.
Absolutely. And she eventually joined the church. So in Reese's mind and in his journal, this is the story of Kajaani,
The wins and the losses.
the Puri family and Sister Mehunen. But here is the hook, the thing that blows my mind. There's a massive hole in his journal.
A hole.
A person completely missing. He never writes down the name Sisar Rihonen.
So based on his own record of history, she didn't matter.
Not once. She was a non-entity, a background character. He probably forgot her 10 minutes after meeting her. He certainly didn't think he was planting seeds with her.
But this story doesn't end in 1973.
No. We have to fast forward. We are jumping 40 years into the future. It's 2013. Veli Reis is now just Burke Reis, living his life, and he gets an email.
Out of the blue, from the current mission president in Finland.
Wayne T. Watson. President Watson is collecting conversion stories, trying to piece together the mission's history, and he sends Reis a message that basically says, "Hey, I just had an amazing conversation with Sisar Rihonen in Kajaani."
And Reese is sitting there staring at his screen, going, "Who
Exactly. He has to rack his brain. But the email goes on to explain that Cesar Rihonen is now a legend in the area, a powerhouse, a member missionary who's brought her family into the church, her friends.
She's the harvest.
She is the harvest that every missionary dreams of finding. And she credits her entire conversion to one specific moment.
Which was?
She told the mission president that it all started when Vili Reis gave a prayer in her home.
Just a prayer.
One prayer. And looking at the timeline, the sources indicate Reis was likely only in her home that one single time.
That is humbling.
It really is.
Yeah.
He didn't teach her. He didn't see her get baptized. He didn't celebrate with her. He knocked on the door. He came in. He offered a prayer. And he left. Probably got transferred the next week.
It completely disrupts our idea of cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
We think big results require big, memorable efforts.
Right.
We think we need to be the hero of the scene to make a difference. But here, the hero didn't even know the scene was happening.
And to add another layer to this, the actual harvest, the baptism, didn't happen until 1975, 2 years later.
Wow.
A completely different missionary, Avelle Gary Carter, was the one who closed the deal, so to speak.
So Reis is the sower, Carter is the reaper, and neither of them really understands the full arc of the story until decades later.
It is the definition of planting seeds. You drop it in the dirt and you walk away. You don't stand there yelling at the ground, demanding it to grow.
There's a psychological safety in that, isn't there? If you truly believe your job is just the planting, it takes the pressure off the outcome. But it's so hard to live that way.
We want the validation.
We crave the validation of the harvest. We want to see the flower bloom.
Well, speaking of validation, the story gets even more emotional. In 2018, Reis and his wife are back in Europe, and they decide, let's go to Finland.
A reunion tour.
Exactly. They go to Kajaani. They meet up with some old companions. And naturally, everyone is buzzing. They're saying, you have to see Cesar Rihonen.
They want the movie moment. The sower meets the harvest.
They want the embrace. The thank you for changing my life speech.
Yeah.
So they go to the church, but she's not there. Her health is failing. So they go to her home.
This is a heavy moment.
It is. Reis is there, the man whose prayer started this whole chain reaction 40 years ago.
Oh.
He blesses the sacrament bread. He passes it to her. He's looking at her, waiting for that spark of recognition.
Nut.
Nothing. She doesn't know who he is.
Oh, wow. The memory is gone.
Her mental acuity had faded. She didn't recognize his name. To her, in that moment, he was just a nice older man passing her a tray.
You know, that might actually be more poignant than if she had recognized him.
How so?
Because it strips away the ego completely. It proves the point of the planting seeds metaphor. The tree doesn't need to know the name of the gardener who planted it. The
right.
tree just stands. The fruit is there regardless of whether the gardener gets a plaque or a round of applause.
Reis describes the feeling in the room as undeniable, though. He says the spirit was powerful. Even without the recognition, the connection was there. The work had been done.
It reinforces this idea that we are instruments, not architects. We don't design the building. We just carry a brick when we're told to.
Which actually leads us perfectly into our second story. Because if the Reis story is about not knowing you planted a seed, this next story is about not even being sure if you were the one who planted it.
This is the Darwin Rasmussen account.
Yes, Veli Rasmussen. Now we're moving to a different city. Ulu.
Uilu.
Uilu. Thank you. That one's tricky. So decades after his mission, Rasmussen returns to Ulu to speak at a meeting. And afterwards, an elderly woman comes up to him, very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
She has a very specific memory she wants to share.
Which is rare. Missionaries tend to look alike. White shirts, ties, badges, they blend together.
She tells him that back in 1972, he and his companion were the first missionaries to ever knock on her door.
The very first contact. That's significant. Breaking the ice is the hardest part.
And she says they came 3 times. Now listen to this. She didn't listen. She didn't let them in to teach. She essentially rejected them 3 times.
She remembers they came back. Persistence.
Exactly. Then, in 1973, new missionaries came. And because she remembered those first 3 visits, because the first guys hadn't been rude, hadn't given up, she let the new guys in, and she was baptized.
So the initial contact, the rejection, really was a planting of the seed. That's a crucial insight. Sometimes a no is just a seed casing that hasn't cracked yet.
That's a great way to put it. And she's holding Rasmussen's hands, tears in her eyes, and she starts speaking in Finnish. She says, Kiitos eteti tulit.
Thank you for coming.
Then kiitos eteti pisit.
Thank you for staying. That implies endurance, sticking it out when it's cold and dark.
And then this one really hit me. Kiitos eteti kopotite kunes me avasi.
Thank you for knocking until we opened.
It's so beautiful. She is thanking him for not giving up on her. But here is the twist. This is the part that makes this deep dive so unique.
Okay.
Veli Rasmussen isn't sure it was him.
Wait, really? He doesn't remember the house?
In the source material, he is very honest about this. He looks at her, he hears the dates, and he realizes it could have been him. He was in the area.
Yeah.
But it could have been any number of other missionary companionships.
That is fascinating. So he's standing there receiving this praise, but he has doubt.
It's a blur of doors to him. He acknowledges that while she might remember the faces of missionaries, names fade, specific companionships blend together. And he's standing there receiving this profound gratitude. And he knows there's a chance, a good chance, he wasn't the guy.
That is such a critical pivot for our theme of planting seeds. Usually we want to claim the credit. We want to say, yes, I remember, that was me.
It validates our existence, right? But Rasmussen does something very classy. He decides to accept the gratitude, not for himself, but on behalf of whoever actually planted those seeds.
He becomes a stand-in. He represents the office, not the individual.
Exactly. He realizes it doesn't matter who planted the seed. The woman credits the persistence. You were there. But Rasmussen's internal monologue is, Miem tenit me dan.
We didn't do anything.
But check this out. The source says that even though he isn't sure, it makes him feel good all over. He accepts the good feelings for the missionaries who actually did knock.
That is a beautiful sentiment. It makes him feel good all over. The communal success. It doesn't matter if it was Veli Rasmussen or Veli someone else. The seed got planted.
He tells her, Jumala peki kaiken. God did everything. Mi vain olimi cieli. We were just there.
That phrase, we were just there, is incredibly heavy. It shifts the whole definition of success from competence to simple presence.
Let's unpack that, because I think this is the core takeaway for you listening. Both Rees and Rasmussen seem to struggle with this feeling of inadequacy.
Yeah, they look back at their young selves and they don't see spiritual giants. They see clumsy kids.
They do. The source material uses some very evocative language. Rasmussen describes himself and his companion as newborn colts.
I love that image. Newborn colts.
It's perfect. Think about a foal trying to stand up. It's wobbly. His legs go in different directions.
It's not majestic. It's awkward. Rasmussen mentions their broken finish and frightened faith. They weren't smooth orators. They were stumbling through the language.
And yet the woman in Ulu brushes that aside. When Rasmussen tries to explain they didn't do anything special, she replies, Yuri nine.
Exactly so.
She agrees. She says, Te oli ciele.
Seriti.
You were there. That was enough.
You were there. That was enough. I mean, that flies in the face of everything we're taught about self-improvement and skill acquisition.
Right. We're told we need to be better, faster, smarter.
More eloquent.
But the sources present a deeper theological argument here. There's this idea that our cracks, our weaknesses, our broken language, our fear, are actually necessary for the light to get through.
Necessary. You mean being bad at it helps?
In a way, yes. The argument is this. If the messenger is perfect, if they are slick, charismatic, fluent, and incredibly persuasive, then the conversion might just be human persuasion.
Right. You bought the car because the salesman was good, not because the car was good.
Exactly. But if the messenger is a newborn colt, stumbling and fumbling, and still the person feels the spirit, then the transformation is clearly God's work. The messenger's incompetence proves the message's power. The source mentions some heavy hitters to back this up. It brings up Moses.
Right. Moses had a speech impediment. He literally begged God to send someone else because he couldn't talk well.
And Gideon.
Gideon was hiding in a wine press, basically a hole in the ground, when he was called. He was terrified.
And Peter.
Impulsive, foot-in-mouth Peter, the guy who cuts off an ear when things get tense.
The text says, none of them would pass a modern screening committee.
It's true. If you ran a corporate assessment on them, they'd be flagged as high risk.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the theology of showing up.
God doesn't need our competence. He needs our presence.
He needs us to just stand there, knock on the door, and be the vessel.
Rasmussen has this great line where he realizes that his weakness allowed God's strength to show through. He says, your broken language, your fumbling testimonies, they're invitations for grace.
It reframes the entire concept of what it means to succeed. If success is the harvest, the baptism, the signed contract, the visible win, then Rees and Rasmussen failed repeatedly for months.
Based on the scoreboard, they were losing.
But if success is planting seeds, just the act of knocking, testifying, and obeying, then they were succeeding every time they got out of bed, regardless of the outcome.
It's liberating, isn't it? to think that the pressure isn't on you to force the plant to grow. You just have to put the seed in the dirt.
And this is the hardest part. You have to trust the timeline. The timeline might be 50 years.
That's the killer. 50 years. Think about Veli Reese again. For 40 years, he lived his life not knowing about Cesare Onan. He probably had days where he looked back and thought, did I really do any good in Kajaani? Was it a waste of time?
And all that time, while he was worrying, the seed was growing, a family was changing, generations were being altered, he just couldn't see it.
He was blind to his own impact. Mm-hmm. And Veli Rasmussen, he might have spent decades thinking about all the doors that slammed in his face in Ulu, having no idea that one of those rejections was actually a seed that would sprout a year later.
And the beauty of the Rasmussen story is the collectivism of it. Even if it wasn't him personally, the fact that someone did, that the collective we kept showing up, is what mattered.
It challenges the individualism of our work culture. It's not about my success, it's about the work getting done.
Yeah, we are so data-driven now. We want metrics. We want to see the needle move.
But spiritual work, and really any work involving human connection, raising kids, mentoring employees, building a community, it doesn't operate on a quarterly schedule.
It operates on a generational schedule. Planting seeds is slow work.
The source material ends with a really powerful call to action. It says, just be there. Show up, even when you don't feel ready. Especially when you don't feel ready.
And just knock. The next knock might be the one.
It's a reminder that we are often planting seeds in the dark. We are throwing them out there with trembling hands, as the text says. But we aren't responsible for the harvest.
We are just privileged to help with the planting.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive into the Finland-Helsinki mission and the concept of planting seeds, I want to leave you with a thought.
It comes down to a question of faith.
It does. We've seen Reese, who didn't know he planted a seed. We've seen Rasmussen, who wasn't sure if he's the one who planted the seed, but accepted the joy of it anyway.
Yeah.
But both participated in something massive just by showing up.
And dealing with the cold and the rejection.
Here is the question I have for you listening right now. If you knew for a fact that the hard work you were doing today, the parenting that feels repetitive, the project that feels stalled, the kindness that seems unnoticed, if you knew it was planting seeds that wouldn't be harvested for another 50 years, would you still keep planting them tomorrow?
Would you still knock if the door doesn't open until 2075?
That's the challenge, to trust the process, trust the timing, and keep showing up. Because like the woman in Ulu said, you were there, and that was enough.
It really is enough.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.